Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan and Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
The word paradigm shift, maybe I should say the phrase paradigm shift, has been used, abused, and overused so many times that sometimes when we hear paradigm shifts, we're wondering, what is he talking about? Why is he using that kind of phrase that has kind of gone out the vernacular of the business world? I just didn't know any better way to state it. What are the major shifts, not just trends? I've done trends before, but what are some of the major shifts that are taking place in churches across America, and what are the implications behind them? Not too long ago, I did a blog post on seven paradigm shifts in the American church, and there was a lot of response to it. A lot of people were interested in it. And even as I travel these days, people will comment on that. And they'll say, now, where do you think this is going, and what does this mean? So, Jonathan, the purpose of our podcast today is to expand a bit on these seven paradigmatic shifts. Don't you like that fancy
word?
Word,
man.
Paradigmatic. If you need any type of definition, we'll talk later.
Thanks. The first shift that you listed was that churches are going from a senior pastor to a lead pastor. It's the same person, but the vernacular and the meaning behind the words are starting to shift.
Let's go through the entire shift, because I did not go back to the past. The word in the past was simply pastor.
Yes.
The implication behind that is that you were a shepherd to every person in the church. And then along comes senior pastor, usually, of course, with multi-staff.
Yeah.
It would not make much sense to have a senior pastor of nobody else.
Unless he's old.
Yeah, I guess it could be a senior age, senior old, senior adult pastor. But a senior pastor was a person whose primary responsibility was to shepherd the staff. And so now the role has changed when you go from pastor to senior pastor, of someone whose primary responsibility is shepherding a smaller number instead of an entire congregation. And when I say things like that, the readers and the listeners I know just begin to debate the issue one way or another. I'm not really in the debate as much as I am what is happening. Now we are moving more and more from senior pastor to lead pastor. The leadership role of the staff is still there, but there's an implication behind it. The implication is that one of the primary responsibilities of a pastor is to be a leader. Now, that brings up all kinds of challenges, because most, and I think I can say this with total clarity, most pastors are not trained, equipped, are skilled in leadership, and yet we're hearing more and more of this phrase lead pastor, with the concept or the implication behind it that you are a leader, and you're supposed to be a leader of an organization as well as a leader and a shepherd in the church.
In this, you are not saying that the lead pastor does not have pastoral care duties like in the past. You're just saying that he also has a leadership and vision casting as well as those duties and the preaching and everything else.
Yeah, I would think that's right, Jonathan. The lead pastor is no implication that the job description has dwindled. The implication is it has expanded with greater philosophical expectations of what the pastor is supposed to do. This is a major shift, a major change, and it is a reflection of, let's put it this way, it is an implication of a greater need for training for the future, whether it be in the seminary or some other type of training.
How should pastors go about getting that training, though, if they're already in their role? I mean, it's one thing if I've already got a DMin or a PhD, I've got a terminal degree, I'm not going back to seminary, or I'm a BIVO guy who just can't go back to seminary because I've got work, I've got the church as well. How do I get that leadership training?
There are different ways. You can be mentored by a leader.
That's always good. I mean, it's one-on-one discipleship, one-on-one mentoring. I mean,
mentoring.
It's the same principle.
Absolutely. And I'm sure there's a business person in the church or somebody who has exemplifies great leadership skills that can say, let me take you under my wing. Let me give an example. I was talking with a guy that was a senior partner of a large brokerage firm. He's very successful, and he's about 56 years old, and he is thinking about retiring. You know what he wants to do? That's rhetorical. Don't say yes or what. What he really wants to do is start mentoring pastors and other staff, because he has acquired and developed all of these leadership skills, and he does not see it in a lot of pastors, and so he wants to start doing that. I think that that's going to be one of the key ways to do so in the future to lead pastors. Now, you mentioned they couldn't go to seminary. I would say that if they can, more and more theological institutions and Bible colleges and universities are offering online training and other types of training in leadership.
And speaking of online training and leadership, Ministry Grid is something that we've just launched here from Lifeway that also allows for this kind of training.
Boy, that is a great segue. I'm proud of you. So we get the shameless promotion in, but you're exactly right. Ministry Grid provides online training for church leaders and also for church leaders to use with their members. So that is a resource that we make available. And you want to get them to, since we're doing the shameless promotion, you want to give them the web address?
MinistryGrid.com.
That's pretty easy. Then a third way, in addition to one-on-one mentoring, in addition to online training and perhaps seminaries, Bible college, the other way is just to read. Eric Geiger is one of my vice presidents here. He reads voraciously. He reads every type of business leadership book that he can get his hands on, and he reads theologically as well. I will simply say this, and this is my own personal preference. I require every leader on my executive team to read Harvard Business Review every month. That's a monthly.
Yeah.
And it is one of my favorite publications in business and leadership. And I think it can translate to the church very well. There are a number of ways to do it, but I know we need to get back to the paradigm shifts, but this lead pastor is one of the big ones.
It's a good point you make about the reading. And you also had a blog post last year that we'll link to in the show notes for this that listed the top business books that you would like that you think are beneficial for pastors to read.
Yeah, and that again was a request by one of the readers in one of the comments that we had throughout the year. And as I say quite often, just goes to show that the readers of the blog and the listeners of the podcast are a lot smarter than I am.
Number two is a shift from trust to trials.
Talked about the pastor being one of the most revered persons in the church and the community. I can go back to 1988. I can even go back before that with my first pastor in 1984. And I remember to be a pastor in that community was a significant role of esteem. Whether that's good or not is another question, but I was held in high esteem. They would say, he's the pastor of that church. And there would be this sense of reverence, of respect. And then I fast forward and maybe look at my last full-time pastorate, or even more importantly, I look at what pastors are doing today. And for a multitude of reasons, that position no longer holds the commands or respect it used to. Some of it is moral failures of a few pastors. Some of it's just the cynical world in which we live. But now pastors are finding it more and more difficult to garner that respect that is often needed to lead and to shepherd, because this particular paradigm shift has gone from trust to trials. They're more likely to get a criticism than they are to get a compliment that would reflect the esteem that people hold them.
Now, the third one is more of a church shift, and that's from denominational to quasi-denominational.
Yeah, I'm a part of a denomination, and a lot of people still have churches that belong to denominations. There was a time that, let's use my denomination as an example, that someone would not think of sending their students or their future pastors or worship leaders or children's ministers to anywhere but one of our denominational seminaries. They still send them there, but they don't do so as frequently. Another thing, there was a time that if you had a Bible study group, you would not think of, if you're in my denomination, getting it anywhere but Lifeway.
But which we would like to encourage people to still do.
I would like to encourage, but I kind of like this trend, because what it does, it makes us strive to be the best.
Yes.
And as a result, we cannot rest upon the complacency that is sometimes created it when you say, oh, they're part of our denomination, they're going to get it anyway. I really think it's a healthy trend, because it is forcing denominational entities, leaders, organizations to ask, what can we do for the church that will make it better? And it is a greater source of a greater reason for stewardship in the local church. So even though I'm loyal to my denomination, I don't think this move to quasi-denominationalism is that bad overall.
A lot of times the negative side of this, people try to paint it as being unloyal or unfaithful to your denomination. You know, how dare you use something that's not Southern Baptist, you know, to use our example. But a lot of times they're just finding a better resource that meets their needs at their church better than they could find from a denomination.
Well, I think it would. I think it would show lack of loyalty to your church if you did not get the best. Yeah. If you're just getting something because it is produced by the denomination, and it's not the best, you're not being a good steward. I want here at Lifeway for us to strive to have the best resources, and if we don't have them, the church are going to vote with their feet and with their dollars that they don't want to purchase what we're doing, and we have to get better. And so, I don't see it as a lack of denominational loyalty. I see it as a healthy sign of stewardship.
It creates competition, which in the end produces a better product for the consumers.
That's exactly right. We want to have the best for those biblical resources for life.
The fourth shift you noted was from solo preacher to multiple teachers. Now, we talked a little bit about this with Tony Marita on the last episode, where he at Imago Dei, they have a multitude of teaching pastors, and they rotate in. And he listed the benefits, and you did this as well in a recent blog post.
Yeah, this trend was something that surprised me significantly in one particular way. I was watching the trend to multiple teachers. When I was a seminary dean in Louisville, Kentucky, there is a large church in the city called Southeast yeah. Christian. Southeast Christian has for a couple of decades yep. been using multiple teachers, and they use it for several reasons, but one of the primary reasons is succession.
Yes.
When Bob Russell left as the senior minister, that's the nomenclature that they use, he was succeeded by Dave Stone, and Dave Stone now is in a multiple teaching relationship as well, and it continues yep. to go on.
Now, Kyle Eidelman is kind of the name that's associated with them.
Yes, it's Kyle Eidelman and Dave Stone.
They passed it on a couple of times and really hasn't lost any steam.
And it's been a very successful model for succession. It can be successful for other ways. It can allow the congregation to get a variety of preaching. Even if it's all expositional preaching or all topical preaching, it is still allows a variety in the way that it's presented. It gives those pastors sometimes a break. I don't think many people understand the rigors that are involved with preparing just one message a week, much less sometimes multiple yeah. messages. So going to multiple teachers has been a trend, but going back to what I originally said, I was surprised in one primary way, the number of smaller churches that are going to multiple teachers. The usual argument was we don't have the resources, financial resources, to pay for more than one. Well, we're seeing now part-time preachers or teachers. We're seeing volunteer preachers or teachers, and as a result, we're seeing more and more of this multiple teaching preaching format, and I just think it's going to grow.
As an example, you could use, say there was a church of 200 people. That's enough to have a full-time pastor, typically.
Right.
Maybe a part-time something else, associate education. Whenever you bring that person on, you would just bring them on as, okay, you're going to preach one service a week.
Right.
If say you have multiple services, you have Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. So you're going to at least preach one of those. Or if you just have Sunday mornings and you have programming on Wednesday night with no large group service, maybe once a month. So that's 12 a year. That's just part of the expectation that the person comes on with. And then you set up that model, and the pastor, it releases time for the pastor to be able to do other things, maybe, you know, more pastoral care, maybe more intentional discipleship, things like that for the local church.
You know, it's hard to look at Scripture and not to see some indications of multiple leadership in the church. That doesn't always mean it's reflected as multiple preaching, teaching pastors. But at the same time, I think overall this trend is healthy. You don't have the personality cult syndrome that takes place. The focus is on different preacher pastors. I think it is overall a healthy trend. We'll see how it continues to grow, but I think it's going to get bigger.
The fifth trend is from an attractional to incarnational presence in the community.
Well, you know well that I am pretty passionate about this generation called the millennial generation. The generation that was born between 1980 and 2000, the generation that accounts for almost 80 million of population today. And as a result of this generation moving into adulthood, they are the generation, at least that minority group that is Christian, they're the generation that believes in incarnational ministry. By what I mean by that is they believe that if you're truly going to be the church, you're going to have a presence in the community where the church is located. You're going to know the people in the community. You're going to act like a real missionary who lives on the field, and you will develop relationships in the community. For many years, the main way that we grew our churches, for lack of a better phrase, the way we grew our churches was to have a big event or some type of ongoing super preaching, music. I'm not saying that will go away. But attractional means that we are trying to get people to come to our church as a first point of visit. When you start looking at another perspective, incarnational, that means that you're going out in the community as the first point of contact and becoming a presence in the community, and then they may come to your physical building.
The next shift that you list is from geography to affinity, and I personally believe this has a lot to do with the advances we've seen in the last 50 years in technology and transportation.
Well, let's think about how we went to geography. And by the way, with due respect to you, Jonathan, and understanding that I dish you a lot, you are exactly right on that.
Woo!
I'm not going to even suggest for one moment.
It only
moment.
Took 42 episodes, 43 episodes.
Yeah, 42 and a half, and you finally got it right. But you are exactly right that this move from geography to affinity. Let's go back and ask, why was it what it was? There was a time that you couldn't even pick up a telephone and call another church.
Yeah.
50 years ago. And then there was certainly a time where you could not have internet. That only came into being in widespread use in the 1990s, really mid-1990s. And now you can even have video communication with someone. I mean, I get a call from my grandson on my iPhone, and he wants to iChat with me, and I answer the phone, and there's his face. I mean, that would have been Star Trek-y to me just a few years ago to show my age. Now we can connect with people instantaneously. We can connect with organizations, and churches can connect with one another. The original intent of associational groups, district groups in some denominations, state groups and others, was to connect them by geography. Now we're seeing more and more connection by affinity. It might be a theological flavor. It might be how we approach ministry. It might be a particular worship approach. But we're seeing more and more churches tied to one another by common factors rather than where they are located.
And we're seeing good examples of this would be Willow Creek Association, Acts 29, the ARC that's out there as well.
Yeah, there are several examples. Some of those are theological. Some of them are related to approaches to ministry. But all of those are related because they have something in common more than where they are geographically.
Now, the final shift that you noted was from low expectation church membership to high expectation church membership. And I'll go ahead and get it out of the way. I'm a church member. I mean, that's kind of the heart of the book right there.
It is. And if we're going to be doing all these shameless plugs, I'll go back to even earlier, like 1997, 98. I don't remember the exact date. Where I wrote a book called High Expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole basis, the whole thesis behind that book was churches that raise the bar of expectations tend to get people who are more involved, give more, are more excited about the church, and we could go on and on about that. The most encouraging thing, and I know you brought up I Am a Church Member, and there's another shameless promotion of that book. The most encouraging thing, though, is if people are buying that book, if leaders are buying that book, which they are, that is an indication to me that the church is beginning to shift. They're responding now to a need for higher expectations. How do you raise the bar of expectations? There are a number of ways that you can answer that question, but the primary way you raise the bar of expectation is on the front end. It's when someone comes into the church and you communicate not only information about the church, but expectations about what they are supposed to do. And now we're seeing more and more churches go from low expectation to high expectation. In the meantime, that is creating a significant divide that we need to watch between low expectation members who came in churches with feed me, give to me, minister to me.
Almost a consumer Christianity.
A consumer Christianity. And now this high expectation member who is coming in, I want to serve, I want to give, I want to put others before me. And even though I think that's a healthy trend, that is bringing some tension between the us and the them, and we need to watch this trend to see what happens as we continue to watch the bar raise to higher expectations.
So we need to watch the possible conflict between the consumed Christian and the consumer Christian.
Oh, that's good. I hope somebody out there notes Jonathan was pretty cool on that, from the consumed Christian to the consumer Christian. Go for it, Jonathan.
Thanks. Well, this week's podcast has been sponsored by Pastors Today. This weekly newsletter and website features pastors' resources and information from around the web written specifically for pastors. For more information and to subscribe to the newsletter, visit lifeway.com/pastors. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I'm not going to have any more closing thoughts on these paradigm shifts that we talked about. I do want to follow up on the sponsor. You deserve, Jonathan, a lot of credit. There's a lot of work that went into Pastors Today. This is a free resource. It's a resource that has been part of the dream for us here at Lifeway to connect better with pastors and other staff in the local church. So I'm just going to emphasize, reiterate, and just encourage you to go to lifeway.com/pastors and look at that newsletter. Continue to look at it. I suppose I can subscribe to it.
Yeah, the newsletter and the website.
It is an incredible wealth of information, and we're continuing to get great contributions by those who are writing some incredible articles and other resources that are there. So just to emphasize what you said, lifeway.com/pastors.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.